These are the Overcast Interviews, hosted by Elijah. The guest for this episode is Redstone Vivo. Hi, Redstone Vivo. Welcome to the interview.
Hello.
Okay, so let's get started. For those listeners who might not have heard of you, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so my name is Redstone Vivo, as you heard. Previous names, Sensilo from AOA and God and stuff. And current name, Redman Vivo, if that matters. You might have heard of me recently playing for Punishers in Age of Ares, getting to the finals. And yeah, I've led a team called Chance for over 2 years and then joined Punishers. And yes, that's pretty much it.
Okay. So, you've had quite a long tournament history, most notably leading Chance for several tournaments. So what motivated you to found and lead Chance for so long?
Well, so basically what happened was, in the beginning I was on a team called Drifters, led by Darlik222, and I quite liked being on the team, and it was very fun to kind of be a part of the team and interact with other people and stuff like that. But I kind of felt towards the end of the tournament that I did not have enough control over the people in the team. Everyone was kind of doing their own thing, and whenever I told someone to listen to something I said, because I was very competitive, so I was kind of telling a lot of people what to do, and no one would really take me seriously because they were like, oh, Darlik's the leader, you're not the leader, etc. And I kind of started thinking about starting my own team. Also, Drifters had the issue of, since it was a mixed team with US and EU time zones, we did not really scrim that much, and we didn't really play together that much, except for like a few rare group of people who were in the same time zone. So I kind of wanted to eliminate that issue and start an EU-only team in which I could play actively and other people could kind of scrim at the same time actively, instead of having two different time zones in which some people have to stay up late and some people have to wake up early. So that was kind of the motivation for starting Chance. And motivation for leading Chance, I guess, was watching the players grow as players and like develop and become better, etc. So when you kind of lead a team for a very long time, kind of to know everybody on the team and you know their strengths and weaknesses and you see when they improve, and it's a very kind of I don't want to get too deep into this, but like heartwarming feeling, I guess you could say, when you see someone improve a lot and like play really well and stuff. So that's kind of what kept me going, since a lot of players were really dedicated and loyal to the team, since loyalty was like number one on Chance. And yeah.
So most recently in OCN's 10th tournament, Age of Ares, you played with Punishers, and your team made it all the way to the finals, in which you did play, but unfortunately you were beaten out by Impact to become second place team. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, so what happened was I joined Punishers before the tournament because Chance was kind of going downhill there, because a lot of people became inactive, a lot of the original members became inactive, so I had to start recruiting a lot of new people, and since we recruited so many people in such a short time span, it just didn't work out. People didn't have any chemistry, it was just kind of a lot of random people together. So I decided to leave Chance there and kind of say goodbye to the people and go our own ways. And I had played during the times of Chance, since Chance was an EU team and Punishers was also an EU team. We had played a lot of scrims against each other, and since Chance wasn't always playing, I was sometimes subbing, substitute playering, whatever you want to call it, for Punishers in a lot of scrims during that time. So I got to play a lot with Punishers, and they kind of got to know me as a player a lot, and I played with them. And basically, during that time, they were really eager to get me on the team. They considered me like a very good player, but I was leading Chance, so I kind of denied that invitation. But I promised them that if Chance ever disbanded, which it did, I would join them, and so I did. So right after Chance disbanded, I joined Punishers as promised, and after that, Shroom actually joined very Recently after that, so like I think it was like a week after I joined, he joined, and it was very surprising to me because because he joined on an alt and I didn't know his alt, so I was like, there's this Swedish difficile guy or by Nuzzler, I guess was his name, and that really surprised me. And that was like the third team I was on with him at the same time because he was on Drifters and Instant Crash too, my previous teams. So me and him decided that we're gonna bring Punishers for really far in the tournament, I guess. And we started strategizing a ton, and we worked on every map, and we kind of looked at every map from the perspective of, okay, we're playing this team, so we're going to strat this way against this team. And we kind of started strategizing to begin with against top tier teams. For example, on SSB, when we thought of the strategies we would play on SSB, we kind of started by thinking, okay, what would the best team on this map do? Which was at the time, according to a lot of popular thought, it was Dopamine. So we thought, what would Dopamine do, and how could we counter this? And yeah, we basically tried to counter each team that we played versus. So we, for example, saw a very bow heavy team, so we went into a very sword heavy play style, etc. And strategizing was really a large part of the tournament for me, and Troom especially. And we spent a lot of time on that, and practicing wasn't exactly like, since Punishers is an EU all team, they were really active in scrimming, so they got to practice a lot of the strategies, but we didn't exactly want to give away all our good strategies either. For example, a lot of people say that, you know, we were really well practiced on SSB, etc., but we actually only scrimmed around four or five times on SSB during the whole tournament time. And we never actually used our proper strategy. We only scrimmed it because the other team wanted to. In the end, we scrimmed like once or twice to test it, but basically, we wanted to kind of keep all of our strategies secret from other teams so no one could do the same what we were doing to them. They couldn't kind of counter strat us, so to speak. And in the end, as you know, it came down to the finals in which Impact beat us. They actually did exactly what we were trying to avoid, which is counter-stratted us. So they, since we couldn't change our strat quick enough during the time of the semifinals to the finals, then Impact counter-stratted us and they beat us on Spatial Battles and Next Gen. So yeah, it was a great experience playing with Punishers. Unfortunately, their communication barrier wasn't exactly the best or ideal, but we did get really far, and I'm very proud of my amigos on the Spanish side for playing well and dedicating themselves. Because every time me and Shroom told them to do something, they were like on it right away, and they were like, "Okay, I'm practicing this right now," and etc. And people were logging on every day just to practice routes and stuff that we came up with.
So you talked about communication problems. Was it mostly due to, I mean, what one language teams would face, like people yelling, static, etc. Was it mostly due to language barrier?
It was actually like mostly due to language barrier, because on the team there was only, if I recall correctly, three people who were somehow more English than Spanish, so to speak, I guess. Because I don't want to say native, because Shroom, for example, and me are Shroom is from Sweden, I'm from Finland, so we're not native, but we speak English better than Spanish. So there was three people like that, and everyone else was Spanish over English. So the problem really wasn't them not understanding us or us not understanding them as much. We kind of learned Spanish a little bit during the course of the time. I, for example, now can understand what Spanish people say quite well, and a lot of people could say that they speak really quickly, but I'm kind of used to that now. But the main problem with the language barrier was that sometimes they would not understand what we communicated to them as quickly as an English person could, for instance. So there were some people who had English in a very early stage of learning, some people who did not understand any English at all. So when you told them something, it would not necessarily they would not necessarily understand it right away. it could take them a second or two to kind of comprehend, and that was kind of slowing us down a little bit. You know, sometimes we had to repeat things, etc. So it wasn't really about yelling as much. There was a little bit of, obviously, each team has a little bit of panic and stuff. So there might have been a little bit of panic with the people communicating in Spanish between each other. But from my experience, there is not any had communication. It was just kind of the language barrier was there, so.
So you played notably, well, you built the Icarus on the finals match, if I'm not wrong, over and over again.
Yes, I built that Icarus a ton of times, around like 20, if I recall, or something crazy like that.
And so you were playing mostly offense, but previously on Chance that you were playing Cannon quite a bit. You even changed your name to Cannon God at one point. So what caused you to change your roles, and do you think that having switched away from Cannoning that you've gotten worse at it over time?
Well, I started off counting on chance, as you said, and that was kind of the position that I really liked because I had just transitioned from like playing survival and kind of, you know, the creative stuff with command blocks and redstone, and that's actually like kind of where my name came from. I was very technical in the game, you know. I liked kind of all the aspects of the game. I wanted to know the game as if I knew it was a program and not just, you know, playing casually. I wanted to kind of know the mechanics, etc. So that brought me to kind of liking redstone, and from there, as soon as I found Overcast and I found competitive PvP, I liked cannoning because it seemed to be a very what's the word, like different, I guess, to normal PvP. There was a lot of, you know, different designs and Icaruses and whiskies and this and that, spreads, etc. So there was a lot of kind of modification involved, and I liked it because you could kind of do your own thing. You know, you could design a cannon, you could use that cannon, perfect it, etc. But with normal PvP, it was kind of, you know, do what others do. But that's what brought me to cannoning, and I really liked that for a very long time, and that's why I cannoned for a very long time. The Cannon God username, that was just some joking around with friends. They were like, you know, oh, you're the Cannon God of the team, and then I was like, that's my new name, and it was just kind of a joke that some people took too seriously. But switching roles was partially due to the fact that cannoning at the time became a little bit boring for me, and it became kind of okay, so you have to repeat this same design. It was less of, you know, designing new cannons, because that's practically the time where I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's like the 303 like LUMS type design, or whatever you want to call it, like the design that LUMS popularized, I guess, among the community. That's the time where that cannon came along, and it's kind of using that cannon since it's, so to speak, the quickest one. Obviously, we can argue about that for hours, but that's kind of what took the kind of originality aspect out of cannoning, and it became the same as sword fighting for me. So basically, do what others do, do this, you know, repeat this all over again, and you will always prevail. Because it used to be where, you know, okay, so a lot of people didn't know how to cannon properly, so you would kind of have your own cool tricks and stuff that other people wouldn't know, but now you don't need any of that because there's one design that can practically, you know, help you with anything. So that's kind of why I transitioned into offense. And no particular reason why it was offense. It could have been defense, but I'm a very kind of talkative guy. I like to talk a lot during scrims. I like the shot call, etc. And defense is a position that's kind of towards the back of the map, so you can't exactly see what's happening from there, and you can't exactly say, you know, oh, they're skyraging, etc., or they're doing this and that. Another reason why I actually transitioned into offense was because I felt I could do more for the team. I felt like I could contribute directly to the game. Like, instead of just cannoning, countering a cannon, which is kind of helping the team, I wanted to, you know, kind of not, well, not to sound cocky, but I wanted to kind of carry the team, and I wanted to, you know, do something that would win us the game, etc. You know, do these big changes. And I feel like offense, in many cases, does that, because when you get into a war room, that's a touch for your team, and that touch stays there for the entire game, and you're going to have that lead for as long as your team is there. Same with monuments, for example. When you break a block, that block is gone. It's not coming back. So I kind of felt like on offense, you could contribute to the team a lot better. And I really wanted to a lot of games, and I really was passionate about that. So I switched to offense at around the time where the House of Horrors Invitationals. I think I played offense for the first time properly against Oklahomies in the Invitationals. So I really got to kind of experience that against a good team there, and that got my passion for offense running. And I just kind of started playing from there in a lot of scrims. It really took a lot of practice. It wasn't an instant transition into, you know, oh, you're good at offense or whatever. I had to really play a lot and practice in scrims. And luckily enough, Punishers let me play offense, because a lot of people seem to have the problem of not being allowed to play offense, since, you know, some people might not think they're good at it. But the only way to become good at offense is by playing it for a very long time. And yes, so that's kind of the transition there.
So you transitioned into offense because you'd felt that you were hitting the skill cap on cannons?
Yes, practically, yes. And also I felt that kind of the cap of cannoning came to everyone, so that it was really, there's really no further development at this stage, at least from what I can tell. Obviously, there is probably some kind of small things, but yeah. Yes.
Okay. So you also recently played in OCN second prime time, which featured reduced team sizes. What do you think about the experience, and do you think that lower team sizes are the way forward for tournaments?
I played for a very short period of time because I was having a lot of internet issues. So I played for like the first 15 minutes of the SSB match, but I did get to watch the prime time from the perspective of the teams. I was on the server, so I really got to see the gameplay. So in my opinion, lowered team sizes were a step in the right direction, but I feel like they were lowered a little bit too much on some maps. For example, Spaceship Battles was a map that I felt like a 5v5 was very stale on. There was not much action going on, because you always had to have a defender in the back, you know, sitting there. So that means there's four people on the map. And if you want to have someone close to the monuments too, then there's three people. If you want to watch a game of three people playing exactly team versus team Minecraft-based PvP, it's more of free people versus free people team-based Minecraft PvP. So it wasn't it didn't feel like a team. It felt like more of a, you know, solo players. Especially for the first part where I played, I just went for their monuments right off the bat, and they really couldn't do much because there wasn't enough of them to stop me, and I just got both their monuments in one go, or in two goes, and it just kind of felt really small, I don't know. 5v5, it's half the people that usually play, so I feel like 8v8 could have worked better for that map to kind of reduce the amount of roles that can be done. So kind of having the whole ship completely watered, etc., right off the bat, but still having that, you know, team aspect. Also on next gen, it was also a step in the right direction, but 7v7, again, a little bit too small for a CTW, since the map is very large. There's a lot of aspects. There's, you know, there's solo offending, which is basically, you know, tunneling around the map, etc. Then there's bridging from the islands, bridging to the roof, whatever you can think of, sky bridging, etc. There's a lot of aspects to cover. And if you only have seven people, you can only focus on one aspect, which is kind of making the game more stale. And, you know, there's less, for example, if you're focusing on sky bridging into the wall from the side island, then there's less likely a chance of seeing a very nice play by a solo offender who's tunneled all the way, killed a defender, for example, and got in the wall. So there's less likelihood of those kinds of events happening. And that's what makes really all the tournament matches really exciting for everyone, is there's always room for individual plays, and there's always room for kind of very different kinds of play styles from the team. You know, they can kind of mix it up, but with the very low team sizes, you have to focus on one play style, which kind of makes the game a little more stale. So That's my opinion on the lower team sizes.
I so what we were talking about with solo offense. Do you not find though that it's a lot less hectic in terms of communications? And also for, I mean, I don't know how many matches you spec, but do you think that it would be easier for people to follow teams with fewer players?
I do agree that it would be easier for example, streamers to follow teams with fewer players, but in my opinion, the reason that streamers are having a hard time with that is that they're kind of focusing on the wrong aspects of the game. They should be focusing on what players are trying to accomplish. They're focusing on what players are doing. So, for example, if you see someone cannoning on the ship, a streamer would usually think, "Oh, this person is cannoning right now," but they might not be thinking what the player's trying to accomplish with that cannon. So, I feel like that should be what's focused on, because in that at that point where you get to that point as a streamer, you kind of start thinking of all the players that way, and then you're gonna start thinking a lot more, towards the kind of idea of the game, which is, for example, let's say someone Icarus is to the side. Instead of thinking, okay, what is he doing right now? What is he, he's blocking himself in, etc. Instead of thinking that, you should be thinking, what is he going to try to do on this offense run? Is he going to try to go for supplies maybe because the other team is weak on those, or is he going to go for destroying objective because they're losing the game, etc. So at the point where you start thinking about that, you're going to start kind of seeing a lot more of the players and really seeing how they play. So a lot of people say, for example, in a lot of streams that, oh, this streamer missed that incredible play, etc. But that just happens because streamers aren't really focused on what the kind of objective of the team is, but it's more of what the objective of individual players is and what is this person, trying to kind of do right now. So I feel like that's why streaming isn't exactly the best. In terms of communication with lower team sizes, I do agree it'll be less hectic, but I feel like communication is a skill that a team should kind of work towards, and I don't feel like it should be given easy to the team. So, for example, in a 5v5, there's only like four people speaking if the defender is silent, which he usually is. So I feel like that's just giving it easy to a lot of teams. It could work for some kind of a mini event style thing where it's not a very serious tournament. But I feel like in a serious tournament, the top teams, the ones that are on the top, should kind of be the ones who have worked towards their communication the most and kind of improved it and kind
So
of made it
you
least
think it
hectic.
lowers the skill cap in communication too far?
Partially, yes. Obviously, it is very hard for some people to communicate in large groups, but I feel like that's just kind of a part of the game and we shouldn't remove it just because it's hard for some people. So, yes.
That's about it actually. So before we end off, one more question. What is the meaning of life?
So I found a nice quote on the internet. It's by Socrates, ancient Greek philosopher, if I recall. And it's the only true wisdom is in knowing nothing. So I'll just go by that quote and say that I do not know what life is, and I think the true wisdom is not knowing. So thank
Okay.
you.
All right. Thanks for being here. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks
All
a
right. Bye
lot
bye.
for having me. Bye bye.
This concludes episode 9 of the Overcast Interviews with Redstone Vivo. The Overcast Interviews are produced by Elijah and are not affiliated with the Overcast Network. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Overcast Interviews.